Oh, we're so close. So close to being the end of the year. This is the second to last show of ItCaf Podcast of the Year. And man, oh man, what a wild ride this year has been, right?
Oh my gosh, dude. 2023, let's just say, was the most up and down roller coaster of a ride for ItCaf Podcast. As you guys know, the Hollywood strikes happened, and that made things extremely difficult for this podcast, of which we talk about industry news and interview celebrity guests. And there wasn't much industry news except for the strikes, and we weren't allowed to talk to celebrity guests. But you guys hung in there, you hung with us, you got us through. Yeah, man, what a year for this podcast, right? Like, woo!
Oh, for sure, for sure. And people have been asking us, you know, how was it? What, I mean, did you have any backlash or any negative numbers? Well, we're going to be talking about all that next week on yes. ItCaf Podcast. It's going to be our final show of the year, and it's going to be a closing out for Crazy Ant Media for 2023 and then bringing us into 2024. That's going to be a phenomenal show. I'm super excited about it.
Me too.
And people like when we talk about ourselves and the company more. So I think this episode is going to go over very well.
Agreed.
But of course, we have so much news to cover in this episode that is happening in the entertainment industry, the entertainment mecca, Hollywood.
Yes.
And so much more. Man, I'm so excited. So let's get this thing started. Hello, everyone. So you want to start a podcast but have no idea where to start? Well, Crazy Ant Media is here to help you. We want to assist you finding your VFE. What's VFE, you ask? Well, that is your voice, your format, and your equipment. These are the three biggest essentials you need to start your podcast. All those hours watching nonstop YouTube videos or all those random website links, those are done. Just hop on a Zoom call with us and we'll talk about everything you need to know to create your own podcast and find your voice. Plus, we will send you home with a 12-page packet over everything we just discussed. It's very in-depth. It is definitely a must-need while trying to start your first podcast. Contact us at info@crazyantmedia.com today so that you can start finding your podcast voice for tomorrow. What's up, guys? Oh my goodness, episode 243 of ItCaf Podcast. You guys know your host with the most, myself, J-Lo Fantastic, and the one and only Mal.
Yeah, that's a little different.
Yeah,
I'm in my Christmas mood, though, bro. I'm rocking the gear. I got my Christmas mug, my Christmas movie mug. I'm not even going to lie to you. I've been kicking back every night watching my Hallmark Christmas movies. It's a thing, man. It's a thing. Everybody is in them. They're getting better and better. The diversity is getting better. I was so happy the other night I literally saw one with a gay woman couple.
I love
what?
That.
Kudos to Hallmark. So if y'all think it's the standard formulaic stuff, you better check again because maybe it's not. Anyway, it's good. Christmas.
Exactly. Past couple years, they've been stepping out of that box.
Hell yes.
Out of that box, for sure, for sure. But of course, you mentioned the merchandise. I mean, you're wearing one. I'm wearing one.
Yes.
We got one back here as well. All of these are still available on our website, www.crazyantmedia.com. where you can start rocking the latest and greatest Crazy Ant Media gear. I honestly can't promise if you would get it by Christmas, but you might get it around Christmas, at least before the new year, for
shit,
sure.
You
for
can
sure.
still wear it on New Year's Eve. We exactly. still got Christmas lights up. Some people keep that shit up till October.
But man, oh man, yes, be sure to head over there and follow us at ItCaf Podcast, Crazy Ant Media, and us personally, because we promote sales all the time because you don't have to pay full price for them. So
you
be
don't.
Sure to follow us on all those accounts so you can stay up to date for those sales. And of course, before going into the industry news, be sure to leave a rating on this podcast. Comment below and tell us what you actually think about the show, because leaving a rating on this podcast actually helps this podcast get seen by more people who enjoy entertainment news and plus those who are trying to break into the entertainment industry.
That's right.
We're all about lending a helping hand here at Crazy Ant Media. So, you know, that's what it's all about, man. I mean, scratch our backs, we'll scratch yours. It's
that's
all
right.
about, you know, I just recently bought one of those back scratchers. So, I mean, you know, that could be you. Be my back scratcher.
I was going to say we get by with a little help from our friends. But, hey, a back scratcher too. I mean, you know, whatever it takes to get the job done. I mean, you know.
Exactly. Exactly.
Maybe.
But boy, oh boy.
We'll do a crazy ant media or a crazy ant back scratcher.
That would be great.
You can't rule it out. Every now and then we just throw some stuff up on the merch page. If you want a crazy ant back scratcher, maybe we can make that happen. We'll look into that, you know?
We'll figure it out, man. We'll figure it out. That's
who doesn't want Bonk scratching them back there? I don't know. I mean, it's like, you know, what's going on? I got a crazy ant back there. I don't know. Like,
you know. But man, oh man, it's going to be a great freaking show. We have so much news from the biggies, from the smalls, from the streamers. And I have some opinions about the streaming wars. Is it over? Because, I mean, everybody saw that a lot of DC content, a lot of big name DC content went to Netflix. Did Netflix actually win? Well, we're going to be talking about all of this stuff and if it's ongoing. So I'm super excited about it. But we are starting off the industry news with a little update on some somber news, because Matthew Perry, Chandler from Friends, passed away this past year, and an official toxicology report came out from the Los Angeles Medical Examiner's Office stated that Perry died from the acute effects of ketamine. Mm. Now, the exact method of intake is unknown. Contributing factors in the Friends actor's death included drowning, coronary artery disease, and the effects of bromipheline. That is used to treat opioid use disorder. That's what that last one is. The manner of the death is ruled an accident still. Perry had been undergoing ketamine infusion therapy prior to his death, reportedly for depression and anxiety. Now, toxicology reports adds that the high levels of ketamine found in his post-mortem blood specimens, the main lethal effects would be from cardiovascular overstimulation and respiratory depression. So I just feel like from day one, I'm reading his book right now, I feel like his body was set up for failure.
Yeah.
There's so many different things that were added to his body before he was even like able to make his own choices.
Yeah.
So it started like literally 30 days into his life. Ketamine, I feel like, you know, they said that only is in your bloodstream for about 4 to 6 hours, I believe the report I read. And so that must mean he must have done it earlier that day. But we all know that he was on an ongoing journey to make sure he stayed sober and was helping others with his sobriety, with their sobriety. It's just crazy because how you try to treat one part of your body, but then that treatment may affect different parts of your body.
Right.
So it's always about trying to balance, you know, what is good for you, what's not. And that's why I feel like, you know, having different experts to talk to about these things is very important. Second opinions are very important. So yeah, it's a crazy thing, but yeah, I mean, I'm honestly not surprised by this situation, but you know.
And it's unfortunate because I feel like he had talked about even just recently how he was using the one medicine for the opioid addiction to make sure that he stopped taking opioids and he was taking this other one. But it's unfortunate about the ketamine because I feel like he was probably doing that legally. He was probably seeing a doctor and he was getting injected with the ketamine to try to deal with the anxiety and depression. But when the toxicity report said that it was at high levels, I feel like maybe he was also side jobbing it himself on top of getting it legally. And as you guys know, like what Logan said, with the sped up heart and the depressed respiratory, meaning he basically, while he was in that hot tub, his breathing shallowed and slowed to the point where he just was no longer breathing, and the heart sped up and stopped, which would explain the drowning and the so. It's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. You know, he was fighting it and it's a fight he lost, but hopefully that fight and his continued message, even after death, will help save the lives of so many other people that are going through it. It's difficult.
Agreed.
It's difficult. We also lost another huge name in the industry. It seems like this time of year, we're always reporting about losing so many people. It's so weird about how it happens around this time of year. This one came as a shock, though. I wasn't expecting to see this one come across the wires, and it was disturbing. Andre Brower, the 2-time Emmy-winning actor who starred in, of course, the hit television series Brooklyn Nine-Nine and Homicide: Life on the Street, died this past Monday. And here's the crazy thing. After a brief fight with lung cancer. He was only 61 years old, y'all. Brower was only recently diagnosed with the disease, so it must have hit him just like real hard and real fast. Now, Brower was best known, of course, for performances on NBC's Homicide: Life in the Street, for which he won an Emmy, and Fox's sitcom Brooklyn Nine-Nine, for which he was Emmy nominated. He also earned critical acclaim for starring opposite Ray Romano on TNT's dramedy Men of a Certain Age. His additional film and television roles included The Last Resort, City of Angels, Frequency, Poseidon, Primal Fear, Duets, The Mist, Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer, Salt, and The Gambler, amongst so many more. I mean, this guy was a legend and was around quite a long time. And the outpour of condolences and support coming from everybody he ever worked with, nothing negative about this man. Every single thing out there was what a blessed man he was, how nice he was, how appreciative he was, how generous he was in guiding them along in their early careers. And it's just, when you lose somebody like that, it's difficult, you know, and condolences out to his family and friends. I know it makes this time of year extremely tough, especially when it comes unexpected like this. And yeah, our thoughts and prayers, man, our thoughts and prayers.
Yeah, seriously. Our thoughts and prayers are not with this next situation. Mm. There's no good way to transition, to be honest.
There's not.
So we're staying up to date with everything that's happening with the Jonathan Majors trial, right? And the prosecution and defense have both rested their arguments in the Jonathan Majors alleged assault trial this past week. The jurors began deliberating there in the late afternoon on Thursday and resumed mid-afternoon on Friday. After resuming deliberations, the jury asked to replay Major's 911 call that he made the morning after the alleged assault when he found his ex-girlfriend, Grace Jabari, unresponsive on the floor of a walk-in closet in the apartment that they both shared. They also rewatched a portion of security video that showed Majors and Jabari exiting the car in which the alleged assault occurred. Now, the jury did not reach a verdict and will continue on Monday morning. Prosecutors have alleged that Majors manipulated and exerted control over Jabari in an abusive relationship. Now, the defense repeatedly called Jabari a liar and has claimed that she was drunk after going to the club and injured herself at the apartment. This year, Major starred in the boxing drama Creed 3, as well as Loki and Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania as the villain Kang the Conqueror. He also led the bodybuilding drama Magazine Dreams, but it was removed quickly from Disney Plus's release calendar amid the SAG-AFTRA strike and Major's trial. His management and PR teams dropped him earlier this year as well in wake of the assault allegations. He is slated to reprise his role as Kang in Marvel's upcoming movie Avengers: The Kang Dynasty, though the trial has cast doubt over those plans. And I feel like Disney, Bob Iger, Marvel, Kevin Feige, They have already been working on a backup plan. Obviously, you see a lot of things in the trades about the rumors. I think they're waiting until this trial is over to make a definitive decision. But man, I wouldn't be surprised in the next couple weeks, or honestly, right after they come back after, you know, Monday's trial and everybody comes back and says, you know, he's not going to be in this movie or continue on as Kang.
Yeah. No, I am right there with you. I agree 1,000%. I think that Disney needs to cut ties with him immediately, regardless of the verdict. Even if the verdict comes back not guilty for the alleged assault, the text messages that were revealed in this trial are disturbing and, in my opinion, prove that he did indeed assault her, at least mentally. I don't know what the evidence was with the physical proof about the physical abuse, but he absolutely abused her mentally to the point where she would probably hurt herself. I mean, the text message, he literally compared himself to Barack Obama and Martin Luther King Jr., said that she had to step up and treat him the way that Coretta Scott King and Michelle Obama treated them. And then when that didn't work, retreated and tried the opposite and played the I'm a monster, I don't deserve love, I'm gonna kill myself today. That, ladies and gentlemen, is mental abuse. That is mental manipulation to try to control another person. So regardless of the verdict that comes back on the physical assault, he mentally assaulted her. That is not a good human being. He needs help, and Disney needs to retreat as fast as fucking possible from that. Because why? Disney's got their own shit going on right now. They've got some bad press, and they probably don't need to stay with Kang and him, you know, Jonathan Majors, and have any more bad press. What am I talking about? Well, another tough week for Bob Iger. As we've told you on past shows, both current and former female employees of the Walt Disney Company and all of its subsidiaries are currently suing the company in gender pay equity litigation before the Superior Court of California in Los Angeles. Now, the plaintiffs allege that Disney pays women in California less than their male counterparts. Now, on December 8th, the Los Angeles Superior Court granted, in part, the plaintiff's motion for a class certification, certifying that a class of women bringing claims under California's Equal Pay Act, which does require women to compare themselves to men in substantially similar jobs, but which does not require the plaintiffs to identify the cause of the pay disparities. Now, earlier this week, the CEO's 2019 self-penned performance evaluation was disclosed as one of many of the significant documents in the class action lawsuit. Now, this is why that's bad. In the piece, Iger, who named Bob Chapek as his successor in the following months, touts Disney's massive year, which he writes saw the historical launch of Disney+, the finalized acquisition of 20th Century Fox, and a record-setting $11.9 billion box office year led by titles like Marvel's Saga Capper, The Avengers Endgame, the CG-rendered The Lion King, and the animated sequel Frozen 2. Why was that important? Because Iger's self-penned evaluation was then given to a committee to calculate the appropriate compensation recommendation for all of that success. Disney's board then reviewed the committee's opinion, and Iger saw a $47.5 million payday at the end of 2020. Now, if you're a woman complaining that he gets paid a little more than you, that's not a good sign. Now, after 2018, Iger has faced some criticism over excessive pay after receiving a windfall $65.6 million, including a one-time $35.3 million in stock awards. Now, the only positive thing I can say is that $35.3 million in stock awards is probably drastically reduced, because at the time that he received that, the stock was performing much better than it is now, so that's probably come down. But any which way you look at it, that's a lot of money, and we know a lot of the other executives that are males are also seeing money like that. So this lawsuit, I think, has merit, and I don't think it's going away anytime soon.
Yeah, completely agree. Completely agree. And then on top of that, they're fighting a class action lawsuit, and it appears that Bob Iger also remains in a tough fight to stay on top of the company as CEO, as activist investor Nelson Peltz, who we've talked about before,
this guy,
is looking to shake up Disney's board, announced plans to nominate two directors as candidates for directors of the Mouse House board, Peltz himself, and former Disney CFO Jay Russell.
Roslow.
Peltz-Tran Fund Management said Thursday it submitted a notice of its intention to nominate the two independent director candidates at Disney's 2024 annual shareholders meeting, expected to be held next spring. Now, Disney confirmed that Peltz provided notice of its intent to nominate Peltz and Roslow as directors, and said the board's governance and nominating committee, which evaluates director nominations, will review the proposed Peltz nominations and our nominees and provide a recommendation to the board as part of the governance process. Now, Roslow, who served as Disney CFO between 2010 and 2015, said in a statement provided by the company, quote, "The Disney I know and love has lost its way. As independent voices in a boardroom, Nelson and I are confident that the combination of my decades of experience at Disney and Nelson's significant boardroom skills and history of driving positive strategic change and our combined consumer brands expertise and financial acumen will be additive to the Disney board. Now, with a shareholder mandate, Nelson and I look forward to helping the board and management reorient the company towards delighting its consumers again and driving significant values for its owners." Now, Tran said in a separate statement, "Disney is one of the most iconic companies in the world, with unrivaled scale, unparalleled customer loyalty, irreplaceable intellectual property, and invaluable commercial flywheel. However, Disney was woefully underperformed its peers and its potential." Responding to Train's statement, Disney said the company has an experienced, diverse, and highly qualified board that it is focused on the long-term performance of the company, strategic growth initiatives, including an ongoing transformation of businesses, the succession planning process, and including shareholder value. So they just keep trying to fight this guy off.
Yeah, and I mean, this is ridiculous. He's tried. Remember, we told you guys he tried last year. He backed off of that because Iger presented all of those savings, those cost savings. He cut like billions of dollars from the streaming losses and all that. So Peltz backed off last year. But now he's trying again, obviously, with everything Logan just told you. And last month, remember, Peltz's Trian Fund Management renewed its proxy fight to get the directors on the Disney board. That came just a day after Disney changed the rules on how they nominate board members. And after Disney named Morgan Stanley CEO James Gorman and former Sky chief Jeremy Derrick as new directors, with the term starting in 2024. Now, you mentioned that they have a shareholder mandate. That's because they control about $3 billion in Disney stock, which is a huge block of the stock and would clearly be a mandate. Said that after the media conglomerate board rejected the request for the board seats, they would use that mandate and take their case for change directly to the shareholders. Now, in response to that, on November 30th, Disney noted that 78% of those shares that make them have a mandate claim to be beneficially owned by Trian are owned actually by Marvel Entertainment Chairman Ike Perlmutter, and he proxied them to Trian. Now, why is that important? Because Disney and Perlmutter Disney, remember, fired him, terminated him from his employment by Disney earlier this year, and he has voiced his long-standing personal agenda, yes, I said personal agenda, against Bob Iger. Now, it should also be noted that Rosolo, at one time, he was considered the potential successor to Iger, and he chose to leave after Iger overpassed him for Chapek. So both Ike and this former CFO have grudges again. This is a personal attack. This has nothing to do. And when they said they haven't outperformed their peers, has fucking Peltz looked at Warner Brothers? Have you seen what fucking Zasloff has done there? And you're trying to tell me Disney has done worse than that? They have not, sir. They have not. I'm sorry.
And that's the thing, too, because everything they're saying about Disney, with it being a family brand and have loyal customers and all of these things, the same is to be said about Warner Brothers. So you could be literally, that would be way easier to take over than what Disney is doing. And I bet Zasloff would happily step aside, because we've already come to our conclusion that we believe that he's just trying to sell things off and leave Warner Brothers to nothing, basically. So I don't understand. It is a personal vendetta.
It is.
It's just one of those things, like, because there's other companies that are willing to either sell off, potentially sell off, or that are so bad in the stock right now that could be easily taken over hostily.
You're so right. That's a brilliant point, because Warner Brothers, the last I checked, and let me check right now. The last I checked at Warner Brothers, $12.26, Peltz. If you have money and you want to prove that you can run an entertainment conglomerate that's family friendly, has 100 years of content, and buy fucking Warner Brothers. He wants to sell it off. Buy Warner Brothers, compete with Disney, and prove that you're the better guy if that's what you're trying to do. But you're not, because it's a personal fucking attack against Iger. Whether you like Iger or not, you cannot deny that this is a personal attack against him, and it's fucking ridiculous. I mean,
well, and it's funny too, because like there's even the rumor mill going around about Paramount being up for sale.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things, like, you're obvious, there's multiple historic studios available to even have that conversation.
Exactly.
But you keep going back to Disney. So shut the fuck up. Move on, and if you want a studio, there's others out there, because Disney is fine.
Yeah. Anyway. Just sell all your fucking Disney shares back and go for a boatload of money and go buy any of those other studios.
That's it. And another sign that of Disney Plus and Hulu depending ties are deepening the ties. The first episode of Disney Plus's high-profile new original series, Percy Jackson and the Olympians, will launch on Hulu as well. Now, co-current to the two-episode premiere on Disney Plus December 20th, the first episode will be available on Hulu through January 31st. While new episodes of Percy Jackson will be released weekly on Disney Plus, Disney is used to a similar strategy recently with Disney Plus's Star Wars series Andor, whose first two episodes premiered was also available on Hulu as well, along with Disney Plus's Goosebumps. That was a Hulu original that was on Disney as well. So that entire season was shared on both streamers. And the moves comes after Disney just rolled out the beta version of the One App Experience, combining Hulu, which is now fully owned by Disney, and Disney Plus for bundle subscribers. The Merge app will officially launch in March. And I mean, and that'll be interesting too, because it'll be a Merge app, but it'll be interesting to see if it pops up on Roku and Amazon Fire Stick and that type of thing, or if it'll only be available in the App Store on your phone first. So yeah, we'll see how that goes, but it only makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And my guess is that if it does pop up on Roku and stuff, it's going to be like Apple, where Apple TV, you can also reach Paramount and MGM Plus and like all the other apps within that. My guess is it's going to be the Disney Plus logo, but when you go into it, you'll have access to Hulu through that, would be my guess. I mean, I have no fucking idea, but that's how I'd do it. Iger, call us. Just kidding. Now, this one makes total sense in the same vein of the Jonathan Majors. Now, see, they did the right thing in this one, so just do the right thing with Jonathan Majors. Hulu is not moving forward with a reality show that would have featured the family of Sean Diddy Combs, the project from James Corden's production company, and hopefully James is running in the opposite direction also, was in the early stages when the decision was made to bag it after multiple lawsuits alleging sexual assault were filed against the mega producer. Now, on December 6th, the most recent allegations against Combs were reported. He was accused then of sex trafficking and participating in the gang rape of an 11th grader. Mm. The case was filed after Combs' former girlfriend, Cassandra Ventura, settled her suit against the artist just before Thanksgiving. Now, Jane Doe filed her claim under New York City's Victims of Gender-Motivated Violence Act, which the family, with the help of the attorney, Doug Wigner, who has represented several plaintiffs like Ventura in high-profile sexual assault cases over the years. Now, two other assault claims against Combs were unfortunately done under that act, but were dropped because the term limit expired at the end of last month, because you do only have a certain amount of time that you can hold them responsible for it before it expires. So, but this is disgusting, man. Sex trafficking and gang raping an 11th grader. Guys, 11th grader is like 17.
And I mean, it would be interesting to see like further along as we go, because this is still very hot, very fresh. It would be interesting if there was a connection with him and R. Kelly. So I don't know.
I was thinking the same thing.
But I mean, you know, not all the details are out yet. So we'll keep you updated on that situation. But yeah, that one is unraveling quick, man. Yeah. Unraveling quick. Mm. Well, we're moving over to Fox, and they have picked up the psychological crime drama Murder in a Small Town.
Ooh.
Now, starring Rosiv Sutherland from The Handmaid's Tale and Kirsten Crook from Smallville for the 2024-2025 season. The series follows Carl Odberg, who's played by Southern, who moves to a quiet coastal town to soothe a physique that has been battered by big city police work. But this gentle paradise has more than its shared secrets, and Carl will need to call upon all of the skills that made him a world-class detective in solving the murders that even in this seemingly idyllic setting continue to wash up on his shore. Now, Crook stars as Cassandra, a local librarian who becomes Alberg's muse, foil, and romantic interest. Now, production on Murder in a Small Town is slated to begin in January in British Columbia. Now, this kind of sounds a little like, I mean, it's always like, I'm going to come out of retirement and do this one last job. That mixed with like a Riverdale situation. So, I mean, if they don't go into the demonic, satanic worship, I think they're going to be good. I think everybody loves this type of content. So I think it'll do pretty well.
Yeah, me too. And I'm excited to see Kristen Kruk back. She's making a little bit of a comeback. She was just in the season one of Reacher. I enjoyed seeing her in there, and now she's going to be getting this one. So good for her. Like to see that big comeback. I've always been a fan of her. So good for you. Jumping over to The Bunny, that's now for sale. I'm just kidding. We don't know if it's for sale. Don't hold me to that. I'm just kidding. Call me. Wonka is off to a promising start in North America after earning $14.4 million across Friday and preview screenings on Thursday. Now, it's playing in 4,203 locations. The prequel musical drawing from the Twisted Roald Dahl character is also benefiting from the golden ticket prices for premium large format auditoriums like IMAX. Now, heading into the weekend, Wonka was projecting a $35 million debut. It'd be a so-so start for the Warner Brothers release, which carries a hefty $125 million production budget and devoted more funds to a month-long plus marketing spree led by star Timothy Chalamet in the first fully-fledged promotional push for a feature since the end of the SAG-AFTRA strike. Now, the sweeter news for Wonka is that it's coming in north of recent musical offerings that have floundered in theaters as of late, such as Steven Spielberg's West Side Story that only did $10.5 million opening, and Warner's own In the Heights, which only had an $11.5 million opening. Now, early audiences awarded Wonka a solid A-minus grade. That reception, along with the film's positive touchdown among critics, will be imperative to keeping Wonka fitsy lifting through the holiday season, where it'll hope to find extended play amongst the family audiences. Now, why could that be tricky? Because notably, the film's main competition includes another Warner Brothers musical, The Color Purple, another Warner release in the DC Comics sequel, Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom, as well as Universal and Illumination's animated offering of Migration. So that's some hefty competition. So if Wonka is planning on trying to hang around, good luck. That's all I'm saying.
That's it, man. That's it. And I mean, I know I bashed the hell out of Timothy Chalamet all the freaking time, but I'm always open to be proven wrong. So, I mean, I enjoyed Beautiful Boy with Steve Carell, and I just watched A Rainy Day in New York with him, and it wasn't bad. But I know I said I didn't, but I'm trying to be more open-minded for 2024. I do want to see Wonka, and then I'll make my opinions about the film. But again, I'm still not a big fan of his.
I'm not going to watch this. I didn't watch the Johnny Depp one. I'm not going to watch this one. In my opinion, I'm an old school guy, and I don't think you will ever beat. In my opinion, it should have just never been touched. Gene Wilder's, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory was a classic. It was brilliant. It should have never been touched. So, me personally, I'm not watching any of them.
Agreed. Well, Warner Brothers has won a week-long auction for Chlamydia Hustle. No.
Oh, my God. That's a totally different movie right there. That would cause some calamity for sure, though.
Calamity Hustle. An action comedy that will star Ryan Reynolds and Channing Tatum. Hopefully none of them have chlamydia.
No.
Adam and Aaron Nee wrote the script and will direct. All the studios were in on this, but it came down to Amazon, Netflix, and Warner Brothers. Led by production chiefs Michael DeLuca and Pam Abdi, Warner stepped up for the kind of star-driven movie that fueled the studio's fortunes back in the day. So hopefully, man, I mean, I love those two. And like I said, hopefully they're STD-free. So they're, I think it'll be good because Channing Tatum is funnier than a lot of people give him credit for. And I mean, Ryan Reynolds is on top of the world, so.
Yeah, dude, yeah, and it's like it's being described as like a Lethal Weapon type film, which always do well if you have two great stars, right? So, yeah, I think it's going to be good. And they're banking $25 million
didn't
each.
Didn't even realize. Didn't even realize that was down there. The spec is likened in tone to a mismatched buddy actioneer like Lethal Weapon and hope to launch a franchise with chlamydia. Ryan Reynolds will play a cop who is estranged from his low-level crime brother, who is Tatum. I feel like they could pass as brothers.
Totally.
Yeah, sure. They grew up on the wrong side of the tracks and went in on opposite direction. When Ro is implicated as part of the diamond heist, the cop must hunt him down before those he ripped off find him. The film will shoot in New York, Los Angeles, and Las Vegas. Damn, what awesome cities.
Yeah.
It will be set around the holiday season, and there will be a big action set pieces. There was speculation about the budget when it was packaged, when it was first floated. Sources said to hope to deliver it for like $140 million. The stars, of course, will each make $25 million around that range guaranteed, with strong back-ends, of course. You always got to remember the back-end.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds interesting. I think that'll be fun.
I do. And, it follows an old premise of where the two brothers grow up and one chooses to be a cop and one chooses to be a bad guy. That seems to be a regular type thing in these type families. But it works. These movies have always worked. So, and yes, please, be safe. Practice safe sex. Let's not get STDs,
exactly.
Okay? All right. A man that did, I'm assuming, always practice safe sex and never caught an STD. The man, the myth, the legend himself, Clint Eastwood, in his final film, so he says, his final film, we'll see, Juror Number 2, has apparently rounded out its cast with Amy Aquino, Adrian Seymour, Cedric Yarbrough, Chikako Fukumama, and Onyx Serrano. Now, as we've told you, the movie follows Justin Kemp, played by Nicholas Holt, who, while serving as a juror in a high-profile murder trial, finds himself struggling with a serious moral dilemma, one which he could use to sway the jury verdict and potentially convict or free the wrong killer. Now, also part of this ensemble cast are Toni Collette, Gabriel Basso, Zoe Deutsch, Leslie Bibb, Chris Messina, and the one and only Kiefer Sutherland. Now, Eastwood is producing under his Mal Paso banner. In addition to directing, the film is currently shooting in Georgia. And this guy's getting it done, bro. If you guys have seen the pictures of him on social media and everything, I mean, this guy's like 92 years old. Looks like he could barely stand up and yet is directing a feature-length film. So God bless him, man. I've always said I thought Clint Eastwood was going to die on a set. So if he this is won't. His last film, then maybe I'm wrong with that. But if it's not his last film, I don't know, man.
Who knows? Who knows? Well, we're heading over to Paramount. CBS is looking to turn another successful drama into a franchise.
Oh.
The network will introduce a new character in an episode from Fire Country's upcoming second season that could anchor her own series. Now, currently, casting is underway for the role. A female sheriff, which is an episodic guest star with an option to become a series regular. Sources caution that it is not the formal backdoor pilot, though. And CBS could go in different routes with the new character if the episode is well-received. Spinning off the character into her own series or adding the actress to the cast of Fire Country, the Mothership. CBS's decision to explore Fire Country's spinoff is not surprising, though, given the fact that CBS Studio produced the drama starring Max Thurdo, ranked one of the most watched new broadcast series last season, averaging about 8 million viewers per episode and 10 million in live plus 35 multi-platform viewing. Now, the upcoming abbreviated second season of Fire Country, delayed, of course, because the WGA and SAG-AFTRA strikes, but it is set to premiere on February 16th. So that's not that far away. And if you guys haven't checked this out yet, please be sure to do so. It's some great freaking writing. And I will say that I think Paramount may have the best TV shows coming out.
Yeah.
I think Paramount and CBS. I think they may have the best quality and quantity, to be honest. Because if you want to talk about quality, there's an argument there with Warner Brothers and Apple. But I think Paramount definitely will give them a run for their money. So it only makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And this is interesting, the strategy, though, because so often or not, you know, they do these things as a back end or backdoor pilot. And if it doesn't work, you just never see the character again. So the idea, like we saw with The Good Doctor, that was trying to spin off the lawyer. And we just, they're not moving forward, and that's not happening, and we're never going to see her again. So this, to give her the option of, hey, if it doesn't go well, and you know, but we might keep you as a regular on the show and just add you to the cast, that's interesting. That's kind of cool.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It must say a lot about what they think about who they're seeing in the casting process, if they're you know, I don't know.
Agreed.
CBS has also dropped the first trailer for Tracker, its upcoming drama series starring Justin Hartley himself as a mysterious reward seeker and expert tracker. Now, we've talked about this one, too. The series follows Coulter Shaw, a lone wolf survivalist who roams the country as a reward seeker, using his expert tracking skills to help private citizens and law enforcement solve all manner of mysteries while contending with his own fractured family. Now, Robert Wigert, Abby McCanny, Eric Grace, and Fiona Renee also star in this. Tracker is set to premiere February 11th after CBS's telecast of Super Bowl 58. Now, that's always a win, because anytime you debut after the Super Bowl, your numbers are going to be massive. So let's hope it's a good one, and it can maintain anything after the Super Bowl, because I think I like Justin Hartley. I think it's going to be a good show.
I think so too, and everybody from This Is Us, I feel like, is starting to go away from that This Is Us genre, right?
I mean,
he's doing this one. I think Mandy Moore is in Dr. Death
season 2, yeah.
Yeah, and we know Milo did the family's like heist type of thing.
Yep.
And I know Sterling K. Brown is like making his fucking film career. He's doing great with that. So yeah, I'm excited to see, man, because like I said, big fan of Justin Hartley, and I think he'll be good.
Yeah, me too.
All right, but now we're going over to NBC Universal, and everybody was kung fu fighting.
Yes,
basically since Wednesday. That's right, Universal Kung Fu Panda 4 kicked off with a mighty hi-ya! this past Wednesday, as the trailer was nominated, as the trailer for the animated comedy racked up more than 142 million views across all channels. TikTok was a major contributor to the Karate Chopping trailer's terrific debut, which outperformed comparable Universal titles, the Super Mario Brothers movie, Minions 2, Sing 2, and then, of course, Puss in Boots, The Last Wish. Now, this trailer, which featured the return of Jack Black's beloved Panda Po, also rocketed to the top of the YouTube's trending page. Now, per the official Universal, the core viewing audience was age range between 25 and 34.
Makes sense.
Now, in this upcoming film, Po gears up to retire as the dragon warrior in favor of becoming the spiritual leader. That succession plan has always kind of been laid out since the beginning, and must train a cunning fox named Zine, who is played by Awkwafina, to be his successor. Now, not only are those two big stars in it, but we got Hee-Hyo Kwan and Viola Davis joining the cast of Kung Fu Panda 4, alongside returning voices like Dustin Hoffman, James Hong, Bryan Cranston, and Ian McShane.
Yes.
Now, the Kung Fu comedy will debut on March 8th of 2024. This franchise has always done pretty well, and I'm really excited for it, man, because NBC really had an amazing they had an amazing 2023, highest ranking or highest box office revenue in 2023, Oppenheimer, Super Mario Brothers, and I think they have the possibility to do it again, especially with the small slate that's coming out in 2024.
Yep.
So we'll see, man. But I think Jack Black is teaming up with these marketing people to get on social media, because we saw how big Peaches did.
Oh, yeah.
Super Mario Brothers. So I think he's getting the groove back, and I think I loved seeing him getting exposed to a younger audience too.
Oh, for sure.
Jack Black's great.
Yeah, I totally agree. And this next one leads right into what you were saying about potentially doing it again in 2024. I think this is the way to go. Universal Studios also landed the rights to the Christmas comedy Naughty, which has Olivia Wilde, who's making a big name for herself as a director, directing the project. And here's why I think it's going to be massively successful. Margot Robbie's Lucky Chap is producing. Yes. Mm. So Olivia Wilde and Margot Robbie teaming up to direct and produce this film. Winner! The package is based on a spec by Cocaine Bear scribe Jimmy Warden, and the auction saw several studios in the mix, with Universal ultimately delivering the winning bid. Now, described as bridesmaids in the North Pole, the film follows Mallory, whose only hope of securing custody of her son from her gaslighting trash bag ex is to find Santa Claus and convince him to testify in the divorce hearing. I mean, okay. Like, sure. I love this. Let's get Santa to testify in a divorce hearing. Santa's going to get on the stand and say, yes, the ex was on the naughty list, and she and the kid were on the nice list, and give them custody. It's going to be great.
You know, I will say that about the entertainment industry in Hollywood recently. It's rough with rough ideas, unless it's a Christmas movie.
Yes!
Because Christmas movies have been original so far
over
these past, 3 years.
Yeah.
It's been great to see, but it's so random, man.
It is random. That's so random. That is random. You're right. But fuck it, man. Just keep coming with the Christmas movies. Everybody is on the Christmas bandwagon lately, man.
Right. Whatever works, man. Whatever works. We're jumping over to Sony. Well, 2 years after stepping in as the permanent host for the beloved game show following the death of the longtime running Alex Trebek.
Yes.
Maya Bialik is exiting her role on the series. Now, in a statement posted on Instagram Friday afternoon, Maya shared that producer Sony Pictures Television had informed her that she will no longer be hosting at the beginning of 2024. Sony released the following statement later that afternoon. We made the decision to have one host for the syndicated show next season to maintain continuity for our viewers. And Ken Jennings will be the sole host for the syndicated Jeopardy. We are truly grateful for Mayim's contributions to Jeopardy, and we hope... That was weird. And we hope to continue work with her on primetime specials. So, yeah, I'm kind of not surprised by that.
No, I'm not either. I never liked the idea of the two hosts bouncing back and forth, and I... Truthfully, nothing against Mayim, but I was not a fan of her hosting the show. I just never got on board with that. I think Ken Jennings is the right choice, and good. All right, let's jump over to Lionsgate. On the heels of an explosive season finale, Starz has renewed Power Book 4, Force, for a third season. Now, Gary Lennon, who served as showrunner and executive producer for season 2, is slated to return for season 3. And creator and showrunner of the original Power, Courtney A. Kemp, executive produces the Power Universe series through her production company. Now, End of Episode is the name of that company. Lionsgate Television, of course, produces the series for Starz.
Makes sense. Because I feel like, you know, that's all really Starz has going for it right now.
That's literally it. Yeah. Everything, like, I mean, yeah. With 50
Cent.
Yeah.
Everything 50 Cent.
This is all moving to Louisiana, North Louisiana, to start shooting. I guarantee you. Watch. Guarantee.
Literally. Rapper Dominique Little Baby Jones, Sway T from Bel Air, and Cynthia Bailey from Real Housewives of Atlanta will join previously announced guest stars Ne-Yo and 2 Chainz on the third season of Starz' BMF. Now, Little Baby will make his acting debut as Pain, an eager-to-learn foot soldier out of Atlanta.
Mm.
And now, Sway T will play Kia, a former college athlete who is now on the streets of St. Louis, and Bailey, who will be playing Gloria. Now, Detective Bryant's hard-working ex-wife is grappling with their son's legal battle. The drama returns on March 1st of 2024. Now, and here's the official logline for the season. BMF continues the storyline of the inspiring true legends of the brothers Demetrius Big Meech Flannery and Terry Southwest T. Flannery, who fostered one of the most influential crime families in the country, also known as black mafia family. We jump into the early 90s in season three with Meech moving to Atlanta, where he hopes to build upon the BMF empire in the South that he and Terry fostered from Detroit and rose it to the top of the drug scene. At the same time, Terry remains in the D to handle business. Charles Flannery, who's played by Russell Hornsberry, and Lucille Flannery, who's played by Michelle Brianna White, marriage remains on the rocks, and Detective Bryant, who's played by Steve Harris, and Detective Jen, who's played by Kelly Hu, return as partners often on opposite sides of the law who find common ground in the determination to take down BMF. Now, I will say, if you're not watching Power, you should definitely watch a BMF. It was very entertaining, and it'd be interesting to see how, like, the two main characters do separately and if they'll ever cross paths in this new season.
Yeah, no, that's going to be really interesting. And the thing that stuck out to me, that whole thing, is Starz really trying to use the word inspiring in this marketing? Like, do we want to use the word inspiring true story when you're talking about drug dealers? Like, who are we trying to inspire to become drug dealers, Starz? I'm just saying, you might want to have reworded that a little bit. Amazon MGM Studios. Let's jump over to there. In a giant film pitch package deal, Amazon and MGM Studios won Best of Enemies, an adaptation of the spy thriller that will, get this, star Bradley Cooper and Christian Bale, with Eric Warren Singer scripting and Atlas Entertainment's Charles Roven producing. Now, why does that sound good? Because, as you remember, they all worked together on the 2013 Best Picture nominee, American Hustle. Now, Cooper, who is drawing rave reviews for his latest directing outing of Maestro, is also a possible choice to direct the film, but that hasn't been all cleared up or settled yet. Sources said that the film had 8 bidders in the mix, with Amazon and Warner Brothers going down to the very wire to get this thing done. The deal is high 7 figures for the writer and producer. It will be a theatrical release. Now, the theatrical guarantee provides an opportunity for MGM and Courtney Valente to show its worth with a big pick launch before the film lands on Amazon. Now, the project is based on the book, Best of Enemies, The Last Great Spy Story of the Cold War by Eric Dezenval and Gus Russo. Now, the film tells the true story, yes, guys, true story, of CIA agent Jack Platt and KGB agent Gajani Vescalero, a pair of Cold War spies who developed an unlikely friendship at a time when they should have been anything but. Now, Platt and Veselenko were new entrants to the DC intelligence scene back in 1978, with the former working out of the CIA's counterintelligence office and the latter out of the Soviet embassy. Now, remarkably, they came to establish strong personal ties even after each was sent to seduce the other into betraying their countries. The pair were involved with solving some of the most famous spy stories of the 20th century, including the rooting out of Soviet mole Robert Hansen. Now, while Veselenko spent some time in a Soviet prison after it came to the government's attention that he had been working as a double agent for the U.S., he ultimately was freed with the help from the CIA during the spy swap of 2010. Now, just of interest of note, which is kind of cool, one of the people advocating for his release and was, like, out there all the time pounding it, Robert De Niro.
Interesting.
Yeah, was, like, hardcore out there trying to, you know, fight for the release of this Russian guy. So, yeah, that's interesting little side note to the story. This sounds good. I mean, it was a huge story back in the 80s. I remember it pretty good, and I'm excited to see what Bale and Cooper do with it. I think it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, completely agree. And it's very interesting, too, because I feel like spy thrillers and war films in general, they kind of have fallen into their own little niche category and not really heavily popularized anymore, right?
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, Saving Private Ryan, We Are Soldiers, like all of those big name, like, war movies and other spy thrillers are just like, they're not really like the top of the blockbuster list anymore, which kind of sucks. So hopefully maybe this will change it around, especially with their casting options. So I'm excited to see it.
Yeah.
But something else that I'm really excited to see is in a meetup from Saturday Night Live alums, Pete Davidson has joined Eddie Murphy in The Pickup on Amazon MGM Studios' premise. Tim Story is directing the comedy. Plot details, of course, are being kept under those Christmas wraps. but the Matt Mitter and Kevin Burroughs pen film is being described as a heist comedy. That is very interesting. I wonder if it's going to be like that one movie that Eddie Murphy did with Owen Wilson that was kind of like a spy comedy heist type of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that'll be interesting.
Eddie Murphy has seen a nice resurgence, man. He's everywhere right now.
And ever since that deal with Amazon, he's like, all right, let's get back to work.
Well, and he's got a little something for Netflix, too. We're going to talk about that in just a minute. And I'm super pumped about that one. Hey, this one sounds interesting, too. Speaking with everybody's jumping on the Christmas bandwagon, Amazon MGM Studios has tapped Taylor Chikuwu to script The Truth About Mrs. Claus, a new film based on the same name book by Mina Harris that is currently in development. Now, the story takes place at the North Pole, where every elf, of course, dreams of being part of Santa's workshop, but only a select few get to know the amazing secret that Mrs. Claus is the true force behind Christmas. Through the eyes of a precious elf girl who dreams of something more, we set off on a journey to meet the world's most brilliant and secretive entrepreneur. Okay.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to find out the woman's behind the man, Mrs. Claus. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Not politically motivated at all.
No.
But I'm sure it'll be good. Well, we're going over to the streaming giant Netflix with a wild pre-holiday auction for Ryan Reynolds' global heist comedy vehicle is coming to a close.
Oh.
With Netflix winning the deal.
Another heist one.
Yeah, right. There were eight buyers in the mix that whittled down to five and finally four, and Netflix prevailed. Well, Dana Fox will write the script and Sean Levy has boarded as director.
Oh.
Ryan Reynolds and his Maximum Efforts banner, Ken Berg and Audrey Chan, and their genre films banner, and Sean Levy with his 21 Lamps banner are all producing. That's a lot of hands in the pot.
Oh, yeah.
Sources said that Fox will be paid mid seven figures to write, and producing deals are high seven figures as well. The pitch is untitled, but I've heard it was great parts for an ensemble in the spirit of an Ocean's 11 type of thing. It is also set in the international arena. The idea originated from Fox and Kinsberg, and they pitched it to Reynolds and Maximum Effort. So, all good things, man. You know, Netflix is doing some very interesting things with their choosing and picking and bidding, but I feel like they're going to do well with this one.
Oh, yeah, and please put Hugh Jackman in it. I mean, if it's going to be like a massive ensemble cast, and you've already got Reynolds and Sean Levy, who never miss. I mean, they're huge hits every time they team up. Thanks. And Sean Levy is directing Reynolds and Jackman in Deadpool 3. This just seems like a fucking no-brainer to me. Put Jackman in it somewhere, you know, and this is going to be a massive hit for Netflix. There's no doubt about it. What else is going to be a massive hit for Netflix? No doubt about it, because people... me, especially, and everybody my age have been waiting for this bad boy for fucking ever. Netflix released the first trailer for Beverly Hills Cop Axel F, aka Beverly Hills Cop 4. It is, as I said, the fourth film in the popular franchise starring Eddie Murphy. Now, the film is slated for release on the streamer in the summer of 2024. Directed by Mark Mollo, Axel F hits screens about 30 years after Beverly Hills Cop 3. That's about accurate, which was released in 1994. Murphy returns, of course, as Axel Foley, a Detroit cop solving crimes in Beverly Hills. And this is what I was worried about. I was watching the trailer, and I wasn't seeing it, and then my boys were there. Then they did it. My boys, Judge Reinhold and John Ashton, also return as Billy and Taggart, of course. Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Kevin Bacon are both newcomers to the Beverly Hills Cop universe, and Taylor Page also joins the cast as a newcomer as Foley's estranged daughter. Other returning actors, which I were also happy to see, Paul Reiser and Bronson Pinchot. Now, veteran producer Jerry Bruckheimer, who of course was behind the original Beverly Hills Cop, is also returning for Axel F. Yeah, Every Beverly Hills Cop film has this classic car scene where Foley's in the back seat and Taggart and Billy are in the front seat. And it was all the way towards the end of the trailer, but there they were. And I fucking loved it. I feel like you can't have a Beverly Hills Cop movie without that scene of them in the car. You just can't do it. Super thrilled. I love that they brought both of them back. And shout out to John Ashton. I got the great pleasure of working with him on my very first film ever way back in the day. He's just the nicest guy ever. Just brilliant time getting to know him and drinking with him down in Louisiana. He's a really cool guy, and I'm super pumped that they brought him back. I am so fucking excited for this movie, bro. I love the Beverly Hills franchise. I think it's fucking fantastic.
Yeah, I'm going to hurt your feelings a little bit. I haven't seen any of them.
What?
Yeah, what the fuck?
Put them on your need-to-see list. They're all fucking great. The late Ronnie Cox was the Beverly Hills chief, Beverly Hills Cop chief. So, unfortunately, we obviously not returning in this one, but all of them are just brilliant stories, bro. They're so funny. They're so good. Oh my God, bro. You got to watch these.
It's so funny.
All right.
Well, Netflix's upcoming dark comedy, No Good Deed, has added Linda Cardellini, Luke Wilson, Tanya Paris, Abdi Jacobson, and Poppy Louie to its cast. The series comes from Dead to Me creator Liz Feldman, making this the reunion of sorts for Cardinelli as well. They join Ray Romano and Lisa Kudrow, who previously were confirmed on this thing. No Good Deed revolves around three different families who are all trying to buy the same 1920s Spanish-style home, but as the sellers have already discovered, sometimes the home of your dreams can be a total nightmare. That sounds funny with a great cast, so that'll be fun.
I mean, that's going to be amazing. Dude, I love all of those actors, and anything, I feel like with Ray Romano and Lisa Kudrow, if they're the married couple as one of the three, that's going to be fucking epic. This team up seems a little odd to me, and I'm not sure how this is going to go. I don't know.
It's a little weird.
George Clooney, who, as you all know, I'm not a big fan of, bobblehead himself, and
that's your Timothy Chalamet.
he is my Timothy Chalamet, the man. You can always tell when he's full of shit. Watch him in interviews. If you want to know if he's telling the truth in an interview, watch him carefully, because whenever he's acting, he bobbles his head. So if he's ever in an interview and he's being like a legit interview and you see him start to bobble his head, he's full of shit. I'm just saying. Anyway, George Clooney and Adam Sandler are set to star. Yes, Adam Sandler in a new untitled pick from Netflix, and Noah Baumbach is directing. Baumbach also co-wrote the script with Emily Mortimer. Love Emily Mortimer. That's awesome. Baumbach, Amy Pascal, and David Hyman are producing this bad boy. Now, plot details are vague at this time, other than it being a funny and emotional coming-of-age film about adults. For Clooney and Sandler, this would mark the first time these two A-listers are actually working together. My guess is it's going to be the last.
Probably.
I just don't see this working. I don't see those two guys. And to be fair, let me retract. I like George Clooney's stuff. I don't hate his movies or his TV shows. Actually, I kind of like most of them. I just think he's an overzealous actor with the head bobbing. It just calm the head bobbing down, bro. Just saying.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
It will be interesting. Because Adam Sandler's so over the top.
Yeah.
So that's going to be very in comedies. He's done really great in dramas lately. He's a really great actor. People don't give him enough credit. But in comedies, we all know he is over the top. And I don't know if Clooney's ready for that. I'm just saying.
Right. Exactly. Well, we're heading over to Apple. And this is kind of Apple's golden boy right now. John Hamm will next star in Apple TV Plus's new drama series, Your Friends and Neighbors.
Yes.
Which he also executive produced. The show is based on an idea from Jonathan Troper, who also is the showrunner of this project. Apple Studios is behind Your Friend and Neighbors, in which Hamm will play the lead as Coop, the recently divorced hedge fund manager who, after being fired, resorts to stealing from the wealthy residents in his Tony upstate New York suburb in order to keep his family lifestyle afloat. These petty crimes begin to invigorate him until he breaks into the wrong house at the wrong time.
Uh-oh.
It's Hamm's first time leading a live-action role in an ongoing series since Mad Men.
Mm.
So that will be very interesting. And, I mean, come on. He deserves another lead role in a show.
Oh.
So I'm really hoping this one does well.
Dude, and he you know, he's co-starring in Fargo. Of course, on Apple, he's The Morning Show, which he played brilliantly. But I think this is fantastic with The Morning Show and this one on Apple, because remember, he did that fucking brilliant marketing campaign with Apple about how everybody was fucking starring in Apple things except for John Hamm. And now he's just rolling with it. So I fucking love that, dude. Have you just bruise me now. Have you watched Mad Men?
I watched it with you a little bit. I haven't like,
just
a watched
but you haven't gone through. And like, yeah. Oh my gosh, dude, you have to watch that one from start to finish too. Damn near every guest we've ever had on this show is on that show at some point or another, like every one of them. Like, it's amazing who was on that fucking show. And Hamm is brilliant in it. Fucking brilliant in it. Yeah. Beverly Hills Cop franchise, Mad Men. Just putting that out there. I'm still watching the Harry Potter stuff. I'm still watching it. And when I finish Harry Potter, I'm jumping on Game of Thrones. Just saying.
It's true.
Beverly Hills and Beverly Hills Cop and Mad Men. Just get on that.
Yep,
Apple TV has also picked up a second season of Platonic, of which we both really enjoyed. It's hit half-hour comedy starring and executive produced by Rose Byrne and Seth Rogen. Now, the series has become one of Apple TV Plus's best-performing comedies since its summer premiere. Co-created, directed, and co-written by Nick Stoller and Francesca DeBanco, Platonic follows a platonic pair of former best friends approaching midlife who reconnect after a long rift. Now, the duo's friendship becomes all-consuming, and that, of course, destabilizes their lives in a hilarious way. Now, Platonic is produced by Sony Pictures Television, where Stoller's Global Solutions has an overall deal. Byrne, Rogan, Stoller, DeBanco, and Connor Welch all executive produce this bad boy. I'm excited. This was a cute one. This was a pretty funny one. I'm glad it's getting a second season.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And only more reason to have Sophia Leonard back on the show.
Yes!
Who we interviewed from this show. So that's awesome to keep her going. And, yeah, we're super excited about all the future endeavors at Apple. So
yes.
It'll be a lot of fun.
And she'll probably be more involved because she'll be older in this one. She plays Rose Byrne's daughter, for all of y'all that don't know. But, I mean, so she'll be – I feel like her storyline's going to expand.
I agree.
Just saying.
I agree. Well, there it is, guys. The last industry news for 2023. Isn't that wild?
Wow.
I feel like it was a good one. It was awesome. I think there's a lot of stuff to take away from that, especially some of our rants, some of our, singing, but it's all good.
I think we can call that one the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Literally.
That describes the last industry news for 2023. The good, the bad, and the ugly. That's all it was.
For sure. Well, we're heading over to our top five segment, and this week it is top five sequels that are better than the original film.
Yes.
There are some on here that I deliberately left off because you guys already know how much I love them, like Home Alone 2 and The Dark Knight, so don't be expecting to see those on there because I've talked about those so freaking much.
Totally agree with that. You guys know, just even at the past few episodes, we've included some films that could be included in this thing, like Star Trek 2 and Batman Returns or the Dark Knight. I tried to stay away from the superhero movies because they could have, of course, been in any of these. So I like you, were like, okay, what can I put on here that's not those? Because Superman 2 would have, of course, been the Donner cut. The Donner cut, obviously, right? But we agreed on a couple of these, and I'm glad to see that we agreed on a couple of these because they were no-brainers in my opinion.
Yeah, completely agree. Well, number five for both of us is Young Guns 2. Not to say that Young Guns, the original, wasn't fantastic.
One of the best of all time.
I don't know. Something about the chemistry between Emilio Estevez and the guy who plays Pat Garrett, because as I'm sure a lot of you know, or if you don't know, Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid, they start out as friends and doing things together and heists together and that type of stuff. But then Pat Garrett becomes a lawman and actually ends up killing what we think is Billy the Kid. Because there's always that mystery behind it. But I don't know, man. I think there's more quotable lines in Young Guns 2.
Yes.
I mean, like the one where Billy is in handcuffs and freaking he's like breaking out and he's like, "Yoo-hoo, I'll make you famous.
Yeah, like, yeah, I'll make you famous. Yeah.
Yeah, like, I love Emilio Estevez, man. That's also on the list. You posted that yesterday about your guest stars. Emilio Estevez, come on the show, bro.
Yes, oh my God.
Absolutely amazing.
Dude, like, so many, and he's a brilliant filmmaker beyond just an actor. He's directing and getting behind the camera now. He's brilliant. I totally agree with you. Yeah, I love this movie, and I wanted to make sure I looked at the Bible because I wanted to make sure, because our producer will call me out if I got it fucking wrong. But Pat Garrett was recast from the first one to the second one, and the star in the second one is William Peterson from CSI fame. He played Pat Garrett, and I wanted to make sure I wasn't confusing the first and second one, because I remember he was recast. Yeah. But and you're right, that back and forth between them was brilliant, and it needed to be, because that's the main focal point. Did Pat Garrett kill him? Or did he live for many, 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 many years later? That was the whole premise. And another one, and I think I'm right about this. Please, Jason, don't fucking call me out if it was in the first one. Blah, blah. But one of my favorite lines, and even if it was in the first one, I don't give a shit. One of my favorite lines in this franchise was when they're kind of dying and Kiefer Sutherland is all kind of like fucked up. And he's talking to Lou Diamond Phillips, a character. And he's like,
yeah,
butterfly. With Kiefer's voice, you know, and he's just like totally fucking out of it, and it's just butterfly. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? I love it. For some reason, that scene just kills me every fucking time. It's so good.
The first one when they do peyote.
Yes, like, butterfly. I don't know. I fucking love it. But you know what was also great about Young Guns 2? The fucking Bon Jovi soundtrack.
Oh,
so John good. Bon Jovi, not the band, just John did solo John bon on this. Jovi. And I mean, oh my God, that fucking soundtrack on that film was epic. I mean, come on. You know? I just, yeah you got to so go good. With it. Number five, Young Guns 2.
I also like how, and we'll get off of it after this, but it's funny because Kiefer Sutherland's character went like to New York to become a teacher or whatever, and fucking Billy came and got him out of there, and he's like, are you fucking serious?
Oh,
like,
yeah,
I have to be with you again. Like, it was always like Billy was always looked at as like the annoying younger brother.
Yep.
And their dynamic is so good.
Oh, so good.
If y'all haven't seen Young Guns or Young Guns 2, please be sure to watch both of those back to back, because they're fucking
amazing. It right up there with Tombstone and Unforgiven as some of the best westerns ever made.
Oh yeah,
like I mean for that's sure. Maybe we should have done best westerns. That was it's Unforgiven, Tombstone, and the Young Guns. Both the Young Guns. I'll figure out a fifth, but there's four of my five right the fuck there if we ever do that right list.
That's so funny. Well, number four for me goes to Too Fast, Too Furious, because I enjoyed this. I enjoy Paul Walker and Tyrese's dynamic than Paul Walker and Vin Diesel's dynamic. And this one, it still had to do with cars. It was still very involved in the racing. Of course, we all know that they get so far away from that and should have just ended with the seventh one.
God,
that's where I stopped watching, because that's the end. I really liked their dynamic, and if you guys don't know, Rip from Yellowstone is the big baddie in Too Fast, Too Furious, and he plays a great bad guy. So I always enjoy that. But yeah, I really enjoyed that one because I love his car that he has in that specific film, because it just looks so pretty.
It does.
Silver with like blue aesthetics. And it's actually, fun fact, that car is actually illegal in the United States because of its horsepower.
Yep.
So you cannot find it. But yeah, Fast and Furious, or Too Fast, Too Furious, my favorite of that franchise.
There you go. My number four ain't going to be no rematch. But guess what? There was. And I'm talking about Rocky 2. You guys remember, of course, at the end of Rocky, neither one of them really won, and Apollo retains the belt, and they're both like beat the living shit out of each other. Like, ain't no rematch. But Rocky 2, my man Rocky Balboa, he fights him again. You know, him and Mickey get together, they get it all squared away, and this time he fucking wins. He proves he's the better fighter. He takes it from Apollo Creed, and the rest of the fucking franchise is history after that, Mark. Obviously, Rocky was a brilliant film, you know, Oscar worthy, and just, but Rocky 2, where you see him finish. You see him accomplish what he set out to do in Rocky One. The humbling of Apollo, if you will, and the developed friendship between the two of them after that. I just think it was so good. And that's why I think it's better than the original, because we see the rise of and the downfall of these two major characters and how they build a friendship out of it instead of, you know, this continued hate with each other. And I thought that was so critically important and so well done by Sylvester Stallone on how he advanced that storyline between those two characters. And I just think it was real close. I was balancing it between Rocky II and Rocky IV. As a young guy with Rocky IV, when it's fucking, my whole theater was like fucking USA, USA, when you're beating down on the fucking Russian. I mean, back then, the Cold War was still happening, guys, and that. So I was balancing, you know, because the workout sequence in Rocky IV is so fucking good in Alaska and shit. But Rocky II gets it for me because like I said, that's where they define the friendship and how it moves forward throughout the franchise. And it kind of leaving, I think Rocky II is the stepping stone and groundwork for now the Creed movies and how those enemies develop and become friends. Because as you guys know, the guy that Creed fought becomes a friend and helps him moving forward in the kind of thing. So I just think it kind of really laid that out from start to finish. So for me, number four, Rocky II.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, so good, man. So good. Number three for me goes to Boondock Saints 2. Mm. A lot of people don't even know this franchise exists.
It's true.
It's a baby Norman Reedus, if you guys are big Walking Dead fans or just Norman Reedus fans. I love this because, like you with the Japanese culture, I love Irish culture. And I feel like there's something special about the nitty-gritty, don't give a fuck, like just love life experience that I feel like the Irish culture has. And that's basically what the Boondock Saints is kind of premised around.
Right.
And it's two brothers just coming back home after killing bad guys and being able to take out more bad guys. So it's a fun thing. It's a fun action comedy, really, because they have some of the best, like, quick-witted one-liners that you're just like, what the fuck did they just say?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, guys, like I said, Norman Reedus, Willem Dafoe is in them as well. So many different amazing actors that you wouldn't even thought of. So that is always very fun. But yeah, I would just say check out Boondock Saints and Boondocks 2. A lot of people get it confused with the animated show, The Boondocks. Completely different premise.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, no. Definitely check out these two. And it's funny because Boondock Saints 2 was a straight to DVD and it still did fantastic and it still was an amazing film. So yeah, check it out. Boondock Saints 2.
Yeah, no, totally. I'm trying to look up because if it doesn't have it on here, but maybe it's the third one. One of those I think is being shot like down in the New Orleans and Mississippi area. It might be the third one. I remember somewhere
reading. Well, I didn't even know they were in develop on another one.
Yeah, the third one's coming. Yep. Yep. My number three, I mean, this is kind of a no-brainer. It was infinitely better. The first one was a cult classic, right? It kind of like caught on and was like, okay, yeah, everybody loves this. It's a cult classic. Of course, one of the most famous lines in cinema, I'll be back. But the second one took it to a whole nother level and really is like one of the first massive sequel blockbusters in history. I'm of course talking about the Terminator franchise and Terminator 2 Judgment Day. Fuck, this is when John is now a teenager and Sarah's a badass and she's like protecting, like, you know, and the Terminator's a good guy and Robert Patrick, the new Terminator, you know, is the bad guy. And look, this thing was from start to finish one of this big epic action-packed, over-the-top, in-your-face, you know, films. It's everything you want to see in a sequel. Takes everything great from the first one and has it in the second one and then adds everything more on top of it. And you're rooting for the bad guy. You're rooting for the good guy. You don't know who is good and who is bad. And yeah, I mean, this was a no-brainer. Like, Terminator 2 Judgment Day, infinitely better than the first one, in my opinion. I loved the first one, but this one, like I said, just took it to the whole next level. Terminator 2 Judgment Day. Everything past that has not been so good.
Yeah, I mean,
just saying.
I, I love Arnold, but I've never, the only Terminator I've seen is the one that we went and saw, the very last one. So I need to catch up on the Terminators as well.
Yeah, no, the first one's brilliant. The second one, obviously, I included it on this list, I thought was brilliant. But everything after that, until the one we saw,
yeah,
not so good.
I mean, you know, the mastermind himself can only do so much. He's creating an own franchise and creating his own language. Like, I mean, I know he's your favorite filmmaker, but I mean, he's got a lot on his shoulders. Okay. James Cameron is doing a lot, man. He's doing a lot.
You know why the last one that we saw was successful though? Our boy, Billy Ray, our friend, Billy Ray wrote it. Remember, yep, wrote the script for that one. So when you're not, and James Cameron came back to be involved in it.
Yeah.
Because the ones in between, he was not.
He was not.
And it showed. I'm just saying. Yeah. Like, you can't have the Terminator movies without James Cameron. Whether you like him or not, you need him in the Terminator movies. I'm just saying. I was like, okay.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, number two goes to Bad Boys 2 for me. This one is so much better than the original, to be honest. I'm honestly surprised it got greenlit for another one. I enjoyed the third one as well. I thought that did really well. But I think Martin Lawrence and Will Smith's dynamic is hilarious. And what they're able to accomplish on screen is so good. And you always feel like these are exactly what Miami detectives would be like, right? You have your family man who is like still stylish, but then you have like your playboy with the nice cars and like kind of like a
Tubbs and Crockett
situation.
Miami Vice. Yeah. It's straight up Tubbs and Crockett. Like it is.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. But I just really enjoyed this one more. And honestly, like this was one of the first films that I rewatched a lot, which I probably shouldn't have been watching at my age, but it was.
Did it give you chlamydia?
Wrong one. But you know, I loved like the whole thing, man. Like the whole setting and the whole action sequences, and I just feel like it was just so much better. So that's why number two for me is Bad Boys 2.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree with that. I enjoyed the second one better than the first one, but I've liked all of them in the franchise, and I'm looking forward to the fourth one. You know, I think the fourth one will be, supposedly it's the final one, so it'll be a nice close out to this saga. So we'll see, but I'm looking forward to it. I agree with you. I think their dynamic is really good, and I think it's always an entertaining story, so that's a good one. My number two is a no-brainer. It could have literally been my number one. It could have. In fact, I was bouncing back and forth of whether it should or should not be my number one. He's one of my all-time favorite filmmakers, James Mangold. Anything he's done, I've always been a fan of. He's a brilliant filmmaker. And he is the one man, the one guy, the director that worked with Hugh Jackman and got it fucking right. I'm talking about Logan. They got Logan / Wolverine right. Finally. It was everything everybody fucking wanted. We finally saw him full out berserker. I'm gonna fuck you up and kill you, and I don't give a shit because I'm the fucking best there is at what I do. Mangold finally got him right. Logan was a superhero movie, but not a superhero movie. It was a superhero movie. It was a Western. It was a drama. It was a suspense. It was a mystery. It was everything fucking packed into one. And it was so fucking brilliant. So good. Should have been nominated for a fucking Academy Award. I'm sorry, but it should have been nominated for a fucking Academy Award. And maybe even should have won. It was fucking that good. Out of all of the X-Men shit, anywhere, any of them, all of them, this hands down is the single best film in all of the X-Men franchises. The new ones and the old ones, whatever. Days of Future Past was good, you know, mixing the first class and all that. But this one, hands down, by far, my favorite and the best sequel in the franchise. And in it's in my list of top 10 best films ever. I think it was that fucking good. And as a lifelong Wolverine fan, to finally see him right. Now, I will say this over and over. Physically, you know, Wolverine is like 5'3" and stocky. So they're never going to get that right. But Hugh Jackman was so committed to getting the character right for for the fans. So when he finally teamed up with Mangold for the second one, The Wolverine, which was the second in the franchise, and they fucking just said, let's forget that Wolverine origin shit. Let's fucking toss that right out the window. And they got close with The Wolverine. It was, you could see that he was on the right track, but the studio was still shaky on it. But then Logan, they're like, fuck it, just do what you want to do, and boom, there he was. And I will say, Logan is, you don't get Deadpool and the massive success of Deadpool, and now with the two of them teaming up, without Logan's success. It proved that you could have a rated R movie with a violent character and have it be endearing. People would see it and watch it. It was a massive hit. So, yeah, Logan seemed like a no-brainer, man.
Right. It was freaking phenomenal. Yeah, completely agree. Completely agree. Well, number one for both of us is something that I feel like we can both watch at any point in time. I've seen it like literally 10 times since it's come out.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's that freaking good. The rewatch value is insane. And it's, yeah, it is better than the first one. It, by no question about it. And we're talking about Top Gun Maverick.
Ugh.
Old Tommy Buns and Miles Teller. But man, oh man, like I just, yeah, it's so freaking good. Like there's not enough words we could say about it. We don't have enough time to say all the things about it, but like, yeah, it's just so damn good. Like there's at no point in that film that it drags. It's cinematically beautiful. Like the comedy is hilarious. Miles Teller just knocks it out of the park. Glenn Powell is fucking awesome. Like I cry every time. Like I'm like, they're about to die. Oh, Glenn Powell fucking comes in and saves the day. Like it's so good.
Well, and here's what I'll say about why you know how good it is. Other than the references to the first movie, obviously, I mean, yeah. You know, Miles Teller is fucking Goose's son. I mean, obviously, there's references to the first movie. You know, Penny coming back, like obviously, right? But at no point while you're watching it do you think about Top Gun. You're nope. Not making comparisons to the first movie. You're not thinking about the first movie, about what was better or not better. At no point while you're watching this, you view it as a standalone movie, even though it is a sequel. And that is a testament to how fucking great this film is. I was skeptical because Top Gun is like one of my all-time favorite movies, and it was huge back when I was young. It was massive. I was 16. I remember going to see it. I was like, this is fucking awesome. This is one of the best fucking action films I've ever seen. And I was worried about it. I was like, is this a movie we want to touch? And but I'm so fucking glad that Tom Cruise did, and I'm so glad that Paramount agreed, because this film took everything from the greatness of the first one, put it in this one, and then expanded the storyline into a whole different direction and added even more remarkably great stuff to it that it stands alone as its own movie. And yeah, I'm with you. I've rewatched this thing so many times, and at no point ever when I'm rewatching it do I think about the first film. I just, this is it. In fact, the only thing I'm thinking about while I'm watching this is, are we going to come back? Is Miles Teller's character, you know, moving forward in the franchise as the new lead? And are we going to kind of see, you know, Cruise revert back to the teacher, and now we've got a new Maverick out there, you know, a new lead, not Maverick, but yeah, I would love to see this franchise continue. I think Teller nailed it as Goose's son. I want to see the continuation of that storyline. I want to see more back and forth between him and Glenn Powell's characters. You know, that's his Iceman. And I kind of want to just see that keep going. And I hope that we get that. I hope that maybe we can do this down the line in season 7, 8, or 9 or whatever season. And we can talk about how Top Gun 3/ whatever they call it is better than Top Gun Maverick. I mean, you know,
right?
Who knows?
Completely agree, because I mean, Rooster is such an epic character.
Oh, he's so good.
And I think, you know, what they were able to do is like just badass. Yeah, I mean, and no doubt about it. No doubt about it. This film right here is the thing that pushed the surge for everybody to have mustaches. Everybody has freaking mustaches.
The
now.
Rooster stash, and, man. That's,
and
like, yeah.
It's because of this film. Like, it's, there's no doubt about it. But yeah, I mean, it's so good, man. There's literally not enough things we can say about it.
No, it was great. And if you haven't seen it, what the fuck? Like, yeah, you know, it's, I can't imagine there's a person out there that hasn't seen this film. I just can't imagine.
Well, that is our top five segment. We want to know, what are your top five sequels that you thought were better than the original films? Please be sure to at us on social media, and be sure to leave your comments in the YouTube section, because the fan interaction is always fun, and maybe we left something off that was, like, amazing. I mean, you know, I'm sure people would say Godfather 2 or things like that, but
or Aliens. I mean, Aliens.
Yeah. You know. Like, but we were talking about ours.
That's right.
But yes, please be sure to comment below and do all the fun things. We love the fan interaction.
We do.
All right. Now, heading over to the box office recap. Last week was a very interesting one, I would say.
Yeah.
I mean, it was kind of trying to figure out what was coming, you know. So, number one was The Boy and the Heron with 13.1. I haven't even heard of this film, so kudos to that. yeah. Number two was Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes with 9.2. That's awesome that it still has some legs.
Yep.
Number three was Godzilla Minus One with 8.6. Number four was Trolls Band Together with 6 million. Number five was The Beehive Renaissance, a film by Beyonce, with 5.4.
Yeah.
And then, of course, new movies coming out this weekend that I'm sure you're already watching. Wonka, The Zone of Interest, American Fiction, that's the one that Sterling K. Brown is in.
Yep.
With Jeffrey Wright.
Yep.
The Kennedy Accident, or Incident, and Rebel Moon Part 1, A Child of Fire. So, yeah, all interesting things. And movies you can still go see right now are Silent Night, Wish, Napoleon, Animal, and The Holdovers. I heard The Holdovers is really good with Paul Giamatti.
Yes.
That's so anticipated. I want to find a theater that's actually playing it, because they're playing it in bigger markets and not really where I'm at. So,
yeah,
that's been kind of difficult. So I don't know if I'm going to have to wait till it hits a streamer.
That sucks for you. It is here. I want to go see it. It is playing near me. And you know what else I saw that was playing near me that's in limited release? And I was shocked that it's fucking near me. Maestro is playing this weekend. Wow. I want to go see Bradley Cooper playing Maestro. Because, I mean, I was like, wait, that's fucking playing here? Like, okay. But I was like, hell yeah. So that's awesome. It's not at my theater, but it's at one near me. So I can, go see it. So I was shocked, though. I was like, what the fuck?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Well, head over the IMDb Pros Top Trending segment. This is interesting because this is the first week that I have no idea what these are or who that is. The top trending movie is Animal. The top trending TV show is Obliterated. And the top trending TV star is Shelley Henning.
Yeah.
So, very interesting.
Animal, I think, is a Hindu film that's making the rounds here in America.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's what that is. And I have no idea what Obliterated is, but I do know that Shelley Henning is the star of Obliterated. So that makes sense. But I haven't checked out Obliterated. I can't give, like, what the fuck that is. I don't know. But it's something.
It's something, man.
It's something, and she must be pretty good in it, because she's like,
For sure, for sure. Well, that is it, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in for episode 243 of Inside the Crazy Ant Farm.
Yes.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
One
more to go.
Yes.
So exciting. It's so exciting. I'm hoping everybody is cuddled up on their couches with hot cocoa by the fire and all the good things, man.
Be sure to follow us.
Yeah, there you go. Be sure to follow us on social media. The company is at Crazy Ant Media. This podcast is at ItCaf Podcast. And the mental health podcast is at Everything's OKP. Everything's OKP. So be sure to follow all of those accounts. And then, of course, us personally, myself at J. Logan Austin, and currently at...
Yes, at Crazy Ant CEO for a few more weeks, but only for a few more weeks, because 2024, I'm changing the handle.
There you go.
Mixing it up. Getting crazy.
Well, be sure to subscribe to this podcast anywhere you listen to your podcasts. We're on Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play Music, iHeartRadio, Podbean, Stitcher, and so much more. And then, of course, be sure to hit that like button on this YouTube video, subscribe to the channel, and ring the bell for all the latest and greatest notifications coming out of Crazy Ant Media. But man, oh man, this was fun.
This was a lot of fun, yeah.
Yeah, it honestly inspired some ideas for promotion. So I'm excited about that leading into 2024 because we're always looking for new things. But honestly, my favorite part was just bashing Nelson Peltz. That was a lot of fun. I just feel like, we made a lot of valid points and
I
it
think
only
we
makes
did.
sense.
I think we did. And look, and we take a lot of heat for this because Iger is not a very popular guy. He did not come out. He was beloved in freaking Hollywood, but he has for some reason become the villain in Hollywood right now. But I guess that just echoes everything we do to all the time to anything and everybody. We build them up to be the greatest thing ever, and then we tear them down. That just seems to be what society does. Iger is
Always.
on that right now. People hate him. He is the villain. But regardless of what you think about Bob Iger, the idea that somebody would go after a company, the full-on company of Walt Disney, out of a personal grudge is insane. And that is what Peltz is doing with the help of Ike. And it's insane. This is a legacy, 100 years of Walt Disney and his brother Roy and what they started and what they over this amazing century of all of this thing. And you cannot argue the success that Iger had in maintaining that legacy and maintaining it being what it was always meant to be, which is a family company that lives up to what Walt and Roy had set as the standard. Now, has he made some missteps? Has he said some stupid things recently? Has he, like, does he pay himself a lot of fucking money? Yeah, but does it make him a villain? I don't know. I just remember, Ike was fired because he got into a heated exchange with and didn't get along with fucking Kevin Feige. He did not want a Black Panther movie. He did not want a Captain Marvel movie. He didn't think a female-led superhero movie or a black-led superhero movie were necessary. What the fuck? They were two of the biggest movies of all time, and Black Panther launched a massive, culture shift into now where, everybody's doing it. And the idea that this man did not want that and got into heated exchanges, so much so that Feige had to bring Iger in to settle it, and now Ike got his feelings hurt. And so now he's helping Peltz fucking take it out on him. It's fucking, yeah. I enjoyed really talking about that too. I think that you brought up some valid points. And I think if this man is serious about what he says about what he wants, then go do it at another company and leave fucking Disney alone. If you're not serious, then you're just proving that this is a personal vendetta and nothing more than that. And that just, in my opinion, just makes you a petty man. You're a petty man. That's all I'm saying.
Completely agree. Completely agree. Well, everybody, oh my goodness. I'm super excited and very interested because The Color Purple is coming out here soon. And you know who's behind that and in it and all of the good things? The person we know. Well, we want to know. That would be great.
My wish list, my Christmas wish
We
list.
wish list, wish list. Oh my goodness. Well, we know her. We love her.
Oprah!
Oprah!